Tune it in, check it out, listen up, find out what it is all about.
Welcome. This is the Matthew Bronson Show on KUPR 99.9 in the high desert of Placidas, New Mexico. We appreciate you tuning in. Today we're going to be talking with Reverend Richard Holmes of the Las Placitas Presbyterian Church. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I am not Christian knowledgeable enough to go, is it your eminence or your holiness?
Pastor. Pastor's fine, pastor. Yeah.
I was having this conversation just the other day with somebody, how with your predecessor, Drew, he just did such a great job of explaining to me exactly Presbyterianism, and it was a whole different business plan, if I may, to some of the other religions I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
And it's, is it called congregational?
Well, actually, the form of government is called a Presbyterian form of government, which is a little bit different than congregational, because in congregational systems, each church is completely independent of every other church.
Right.
So for example, within the Baptist church, you'll have things like the Southern Baptist Convention and things like that. Right. So what that is, that's just kind of a loose association of a bunch of independent churches that get together. But within the Presbyterian system, we're more connectional. We're connected to each other nationally. So that's how our government works. We're connected nationally, but we're also representative, in that we're all the representatives, you know, from the top down, are all elected by the people. They're all elected on the congregational level. So it's kind of like, I mean, it's a lot like the kind of representative government you have in DC. It's you know, it's modeled. It's in fact, you know, a lot of people, if you go back in history, people will say that our system of government is really modeled on the Presbyterian system, and that it's representative.
Right. And what we now have is not exactly the way.
well, we won't get into that, but yeah, sure, so, right, exactly.
Was there a Larry Presbyterian, and it's named after him?
Well, the word Presbyterian actually comes from... I'm just going to bore your listeners to tears with this, but the word Presbyterian comes from the Greek word presbyteros, which means elders.
Okay.
And so the elders are the representatives who are elected on the congregational level. You know, you think of elders as being old people. Most of us are old, but that's just, you know, coincidence. An elder is somebody who's elected. Yeah.
Someone who made it past 30 at one point was an elder.
Well, true, yeah.
So, right. And Presbyterian sounds better than Eldertarian.
Well, that's true, yeah.
So they had good marketing.
right.
The
Harder to spell, though. Harder to spell.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. Presbyterian is not one of those, thank goodness for spell check.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Until they totally mess up what I'm trying to say. Do you, in this form of government, each church has a certain number of votes or delegates when it goes to the...
That's right. Yeah.
And do people want to be delegates?
A lot of people do. Not everybody does, but a lot of people do. You know, you being a delegate means that, you know, you often have to sit through meetings, and they're usually on a Saturday, and so the meetings can take half your Saturday, and so not everybody wants to do that. But
well, you don't get together in Reno or someplace, or the Bahamas?
Oh, that'd be fun, wouldn't it? Yeah. If we had the money, we would, I'm sure. If we had the money, I'm sure we'd love to go. We do have one a year, actually, here that goes up to Ghost Ranch. Okay. So that's kind of nice. So that's kind of like a weekend retreat, a weekend getaway, and a meeting, too.
It's not the Atlantis in Nassau.
Correct. Yeah. Unfortunately, no. But yeah.
We'll have a private junket. We'll call it a media junket.
Yeah.
So how many within? So is it the state?
Well, they have what they call presbyteries, which sometimes is a whole state.
Who's your next level up? Who's your supervisor?
It would be the Presbytery of Santa Fe. So there's not actually one person who's the next level up. Sometimes there is. So sometimes within a presbytery you'll have what they call an executive presbyter or a general presbyter. I'm just learning about the system they have here, which is in the Santa Fe Presbytery. But so yeah, sometimes they'll have like a person who's like the head honcho of the presbytery, and right. that would be like the next level up.
Is that like a bishop in the Catholic world?
It's kind of like a bishop. It's kind of, we don't call them bishops, but it's kind of like a bishop. Yeah, yeah.
But you don't have to wear a dress like that.
You don't have to wear a dress like that. Okay. Correct. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the next level above that is still at the state level, or is it the
next level? It would be regional. Next level would be regional, and that's the synod. They don't do a whole lot.
Do they know you feel that way?
Well, they probably know that I feel that way. They don't do a whole lot. In fact, you know, if you look at our, they have very little influence. And so, but after that comes the national level, which is the General Assembly, and they meet every 2 years. They elect a moderator, somebody who moderates for every 2 years. So really, then it's the most of the decisions get made on the national level and the regional level, and the and of course on the congregational level.
Sure.
The regional level, not as the kind of intermediate between the national and the presbytery, not so much. Yeah.
Well, so at the local level, the New Mexico level.
Yeah.
What might that group do that would affect either you being the reverend pastor or just the operation, say, of the school or whatever? Do they have,
right.
Could they do anything?
Sure. So they would have to approve. So before I ever got hired,
right.
They have to sign off on that. They have to approve that. They have to approve the relationship.
But they don't find you who...
No, they didn't find me. Yes and no. It's helpful. I reached out to the presbytery. I reached out to somebody on that level and called them and sent my resume and all that. So that's helpful.
So that's the level that would get anybody's resume.
Yeah. Now you don't have to do it that way, but that helps. It's helpful to do it that way. You can also just contact the church directly as well.
Or the local.
The local church, okay. Right? The local church and their local board that might be looking for a new pastor. You can contact them directly. It's sometimes helpful also to contact somebody from the presbytery too, which is what I did. But the decision to come together is made mutually between the congregation and the pastor, but the presbytery would have to sign off on that. So that's one thing they do.
Right.
They also have things like they fund camps and things like that. You know, fund youth camps and things. So I believe that, in fact, I'm pretty sure that Ghost Ranch is funded by our presbytery.
And then what's the money trail up to the presbytery? How do they get their money?
They rob banks and they
they're Wells Fargo.
we fund them. We actually fund them through offerings and things like that.
Okay,
it's something called the per capita, which is something that we you know have to pay every year. So
each individual person or the church or the
each individual person both. Each individual person has to pay. If they don't pay, then the church gets charged. So let's say you have, let's say your church has 200 members. So what we do is we ask everybody in the church, all the members, to pay their share of the per capita, which is, I want to say, $30 a member or something like that, per member per year. So that's what they would pay. And that would, part of that funding would go to the presbytery. Then part of it would also go to the Synod and the General Assembly. Right. And so they pay that every year. If they don't pay that, we get charged anyway. So what we do is we urge people to pay their fair share so that we don't end up having to take it out of our budget.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, but day-to-day operations are not cheap.
No.
So where does that money come from? The offerings?
That comes from offerings and pledges, tithes, yeah.
Is there a suggested tithe, like with some religions say X amount of your salary?
Well, the suggested tithe is what we say is, which is biblical, is 10%. Now, is that gross or is that net? I mean, they didn't make those distinctions in the Bible. So, you know,
depends who's doing your accounting.
Right, right. I think, I would say that the people who actually give 10% are probably few and far between. Mm-hmm. But we encourage people to come as close to that as they can. I think the way I talk about it is I think everybody has different financial circumstances and there's only,
we have a real spread of wealth. Or
absolutely.
Wealth
absolutely. Here. So, you know, everybody's circumstances are different, but we urge people to try to come as close to that as they can. And for other people, I mean, 10% is nothing. I mean, they're in a position to give far more than 10%, and
do
it varies. It varies from person to person. Some people do, sure. Some people do. Some people are very generous.
I found Placidus to be exceptionally giving.
Oh yeah,
and not just in money.
Right.
You know, anytime anybody's ill or dies or even happy things. I mean, you haven't been here for the 4th of July yet, and I don't know if they're going to have the parade this year, but down by Carrasito, where you turned into my street, every year, 4th of July, it's not in the signpost, no things up. Everybody just knows, show up at 11, or show up at 10, decorate your wagon or your whatever, and then they parade all around through the villages and throw candy at the kids, and the streets are lined elbow to elbow.
Yeah, and don't they normally tar and feather the new guy? They like put call them like Benedict Arnold. And the new guy in town, usually the pastor. Don't they do that too?
Not usually, always, whether he's new or not.
All right, looking forward to that.
I think you underrate the value that the church has in the community.
Yeah,
and everyone associated with it.
Yeah.
So you were not reached by a Unitarian or headhunter. And said, "Hey, we got this place out near Santa Fe, and looking for someone with just your experience."
No, I wasn't. Mm-mm, no.
So, but you were in Ohio for quite a while.
I was in Ohio, about 6.5 years. Yeah, that's where my wife grew up, and so at some point in our lives, we wanted to go back to her roots and be near her parents and so forth. And
now.
Six years of Ohio winters is tough. That does something to you,
Six weeks.
So it's nice to be back in the sunshine. It's very nice.
I always wonder about that when you had Brigham Young going west or whatever, and they reached this place. And I don't know whether they got there in summer or winter. I assume they got there when it was nice.
Yeah.
But then that first winter, it's like, Jebediah, pack up the wagon. Yeah. We're not staying. But...
Yeah,
and it's been a stronghold for LDS forever.
Yeah, so yeah.
Somebody likes Montana. I think that's Montana and all those areas are some of the few states that have a net increase in population compared to some of the others.
Yeah, yeah.
Things must really be bad someplace if you're thinking that Nebraska is.
I know. Well, some people are very drawn to it. Some people like Seattle. Some people love the rain and clouds of Seattle you have 9 months out of the year. Some people,
in the mildew between
it suits some people. Toes. It doesn't suit me, but it suits some people.
I had a friend when I was living in the D.C. area.
Yeah.
Who was actually from Roanoke. So they weren't a Northwesterner person.
Mm-hmm.
At like 35 or 40, she said, "I want to go to Seattle. Wow. It's not rainy and dreary enough in D.C.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to really be depressed.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so, even on a full moon, this person had an umbrella. So they didn't like that. So each to his own.
Exactly.
A lot of Ohio people out here in Placidus.
There's Ohio, you find Ohio, it's amazing. You find Ohio people everywhere I've been, I've found Ohio people. And you find them in droves, too. It's I guess they're all trying to get out. I don't know.
When we were in Melbourne, Florida, people said that somewhat facetiously, but it was pretty true.
Yeah.
Any group of people of more than 10, more than likely one will have been from Ohio.
Yeah. That's right.
Well,
it's amazing. I know. It's amazing.
It's surprising anyone still left there.
I know. Yeah.
And it is. It's cleaning up its act, as it were, as far as cities go that were part of Industrial Revolution and all that.
Yeah. And you have a lot of people. I mean, you have a lot of people At tourist destinations, you'll find, especially in January, February, March, April, you'll find, you know, Ohioans going to Florida and vacationing, and because they're the winter is so long and dreary that they're trying to get out, and so yeah, you'll find them, Florida, South Carolina, Myrtle Beach, Hilton Head.
But they got to go back for.
They got to go back eventually, right?
Well, ice fishing season, you don't want to miss that,
right? Yes, exactly.
That's probably like golf or bass fishing. It's an excuse to drink beer.
Yeah.
Are you a golfer by any chance?
I am not a golfer. I tried taking lessons when I was a kid, and I took them with my stepfather, and all he did was yell at me whenever I did anything wrong. So I was scared. I was traumatized by that experience.
Did he only yell at you when during golf, or he just yell at you all the time anyway?
Well, he would yell all the time anyway, but just having that experience with golf, I associated golf with negative emotions. He was an avid golfer. Yes, he was.
And you wanted
to
play golf to get recognition from him.
Oh, I just thought it would be, I thought it'd be a fun thing to do. I don't know. Maybe it was to get recognition from him. I don't know. Maybe, but I thought it'd be a fun thing to do. But I was so traumatized by that.
But you didn't go the standard young man's route. Get a guitar so you can get a band so you can attract girls.
I did not do that. No, I didn't do that.
Me
no.
Neither.
Yeah.
A guitar wasn't going to help me.
Yeah.
I had nine counts against me anyway. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Although there's some amazing rock and roll guitarists.
Yeah.
Who are not particularly pretty.
That's true. That's true.
I
played piano, but you couldn't. You couldn't carry a piano to the middle of the campus and have all the girls, you know, gather around you because right. It wasn't.
But you can get in any party and yeah. play Elton John or whatever is popular in your day. Rudy Valley, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Since I work with Placidus Artist Series and dealing with a lot of musicians of different instruments,
mm-hmm.
the pianist seemed to be the most widely represented in national, international competitions is
yeah.
the word.
Yeah.
More so, I don't know if there's a some award for bassoon players, like being a Steinway artist for a piano.
I don't know. I don't know.
But yeah. all of those instruments, some you can put in your back pocket.
Yeah.
Some, but so these people have to come to a different climate.
Yeah.
And different altitude,
yeah.
and play a piano they probably have never seen. I don't know, to give them an hour or something to get used to it.
I don't know.
That's got to be such a handicap.
But Matthew, you remember when every home used to have a piano. I mean, it's not that way anymore, but it used to be everybody had a piano. I mean, you couldn't walk into a home that didn't have a piano, and at some point that's changed. And I don't know when or where, but you just don't see that anymore. You know?
Maybe that's one of those data points that is representative of the larger deterioration of the family unit.
Yeah.
You know, you came home from school.
Yeah.
And you might have even taken, I think I took piano lessons at elementary school.
Yeah.
But when the piano, you had one of those fold-out keyboards with the white keys and the black keys.
Right, right.
And you kind of learned that way.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was effective or not, but you got at least introduced to music and reading of music a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you came home, did your homework, and then you had your piano lessons.
You had your piano lessons. That's right. Right. That's right.
And then you played Minecraft.
Yeah.
One of the problems is this digital age,
mm-hmm.
Even from a preaching perspective,
yeah.
is so different.
It's very different.
If I'm in the front row
right.
looking at you, and even the back row at this church,
right.
you can see who's asleep.
Right.
Not that anyone ever is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you're Zooming, it's you have no idea.
Right. Right.
It's like when I did terrestrial radio.
Yeah.
There was the sound engineer and then the station engineer on the glass and then me.
Yeah.
And all I knew, they probably weren't even listening.
Yeah.
So you don't know what's on the other side of the microphone.
Right. Right.
And yeah. So it has that. Have there been conversations at any of the church levels, even up to the national level, where it's like, this is how you need to adjust your sermon style, or just the
oh,
the
I gosh, I you know what? I wish there were. I wish there were. I feel like we're in an age where we're just all learning as we go. You know, I just and I tell people. I mean, for a while at Las Placidas, I was preaching. I mean, just completely on Zoom. So now we're doing a hybrid kind of thing where I'm preaching to the congregation because we're open to a limited extent, and then there's a Zoom camera on me. But for a while, I was just looking in the camera when we were completely closed. I was just looking in the camera and preaching on Zoom, and it is so unnatural to me. It is so just foreign to anything that I'm used to. I know, and it's just you know, we were not, and I'm sure that going forward, I think what's going to happen with this, with COVID, mm-hmm. Is that we're going to be entering a new age. And you know, it's interesting. I was watching a documentary, recently about the Kennedy assassination, which was before my time, but I'm sure you remember that. That said, that
you,
you know,
say that because you weren't there.
I wasn't around then. But what I heard was that prior to the Kennedy assassination, the main source of information for people, for their news, was through radio. But what happened instinctively to everybody when they heard the news about the shooting in Dallas is that everybody turned on the TV, and it was at that point. It was at that point that history crossed a threshold where now the number one source of news for people became television. And I think COVID has been very similar in that now now that we've crossed the threshold, I don't think there's any going back. And I think we're going to be doing Zoom from here on out for our meetings and things like that and for worship. And I think that what's going to happen is that we're gonna have, you know, you're gonna have seminary classes and in seminaries and divinity schools and things like that. You're gonna have classes on how to preach on Zoom,
right?
And how to get, because but right now we're just learning as we go. I mean, you know, and it has felt so unnatural to me because I wasn't trained to do this. I had no training about how to do this, you know, by looking into a camera the whole time. But sure. I think this is the future.
Media training is huge.
Yeah.
Whether you have watched enough television in your life and what they now call news, which is really more entertainment TV.
Yeah.
Don't get a lot of news on TV anymore.
Right. No. It's all entertainment.
And you can tell, just look, well, I don't want to get too personal to Albuquerque, but think of newscasters that you have watched from various parts of the country as you traveled, and you can go, wow, that man or that woman, they're good.
Yeah.
And then someone else is English their second language, or why would they wear that outfit, man or woman?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you're on TV.
Right. Yeah.
You should know, but and where's the station manager or the field, the stage producer going,
right,
this is not Studio 54.
Yeah.
Regardless of your age.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So maybe there's a business out there for people to teach Zoom training.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is going to create a whole new industry, you know.
But I've also found, Rich, that most people don't care.
Yeah.
They don't. This is me.
Yeah.
Don't tell me you know, I have to look this way, and then I have to engage that person and that person, and then be inclusive.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
I know that's how you do it.
Yeah, yeah.
But some people don't know that's how you do it, and it's a Zoom meeting. Just leave me alone.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
So when you got here, and what was your first service?
First service. Our first services were completely over Zoom, mm-hmm. right? So I got here in January, and we just started opening up physically, like to having people in the sanctuary. That happened on Palm Sunday,
and when did you do your first Zoom?
Which would have been So about the 1st of April, end of March, 1st of April, somewhere around there. Yeah. Yeah.
And how many church members had you met at that point?
I'd met a lot of them over Zoom or not
face to face.
Face to face, not many.
So there's that's the challenge I'm getting at.
Right.
You've met a dozen people and there are several hundred members.
Right, right.
And
we've got about 140 members. Yeah.
I don't even know your personality.
Yeah.
I don't know your sensitivities.
Right.
Maybe I could say something a certain way that I know would touch you, but I don't know you.
Right.
That's a tough job, Rich.
Yeah.
They're keeping you on.
They're keeping me on. Right. Yeah, exactly.
There's no Amendment 25 to...
They could boot me out the door if they wanted to, but yeah.
It would probably have to be something really egregious.
Yeah. Usually it is. Yeah.
But that's like a marriage in a way. This is not just picking your newspaper delivery guy or woman.
No, it's not.
It's not up close and personal.
That's
right. When you were in Ohio, was that your first tour of duty?
No, it was not. No, I'd been in. I had been in North Carolina and New York. Long Island and New York. Yeah.
No, I would think that could be a tough audience.
That was a tough audience. Yes, sir.
I nailed it.
That was very tough. Yeah.
Because you were audience. Southern or?
Because it's a very different culture, as you know. I mean, it's a culture where there just is very little. I mean, you know what we call a filter, where people
I've heard of it, but I don't possess one.
You know, it's. I mean, having grown up in the South, but really, if you grow up anywhere else, I would think that
and there's a big stereotype that you were a Presbyterian minister in Long Island,
right?
And everyone goes Long Island. Isn't everybody Jewish there?
Jewish or Catholic, and so you would have, you know, you'd have people. People who would go to the Presbyterian church when I was in the South, when I was in North Carolina, you'd have people, you know, come up to the Presbyterians and said, "I don't know why you're going to that church. There's a perfectly good Baptist church right down the street." And then, when I was in New York, the same kind of thing, but it was about the Catholic Church. Why are you going there? There's a perfectly good Catholic church right down the street. So,
did you say that's an oxymoron? there's your filter.
I'm predominantly Catholic and Jewish culture, and so we were, very much in the minority.
Your parishioners had to have like tinted windows so they could.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Well, but I would think you would have a very faithful flock.
Yes, I did. I did. Yeah, a lot of really good folks, but it was unless you grew up there, I think it's very hard to acclimate to that culture, and that's what I found.
It's like I know that the so-called reality show. It's funny that these reality shows are so far from reality.
I know it.
Jersey Shore. That's closer to reality than some of the others.
Right. Right.
But. So, I assume that you adjusted your preaching style and your management style for the community you were serving.
Right. Yeah.
How will that be different here, or how is it already different?
You know, I feel as though this is such. I know I know that everybody who's the pastor of the church would say this, but sincerely, I mean, without any kind of. I'm not saying this just because it's the political thing to say, but this is such a motivated church. What I found here is that what I don't have to do, which is very refreshing to me, is I don't have to motivate this congregation to get out and do the kinds of things that most pastors have to motivate the congregations to do. This is a very active congregation when it comes to being involved in the community, when it comes to being involved internationally in mission and things like that. They have this level of energy where whenever you discuss a problem with them, their answer to that is, well, you know, how do we solve this problem? What do we do? How do we, what can we do to make this better? Mm-hmm. That's a pastor's dream. That's something I've never encountered before anywhere. So that's one thing I find, that I don't have to spend 80% of my energy trying to motivate people in this church. And that's been great. That's been great.
Casa Rosa, the food pantry,
right,
part of the church,
right,
needed a roof.
Right.
How long did that take to raise that money? Like, blink of an eye?
Right. Well, exactly.
That's your congregation.
That's my congregation.
And other people aren't even part of the congregation.
Right, right.
It's a really interesting place.
It's a very interesting place. I mean, they're engaged with the Placidus Artist Series, with Casa Rosa, with helping people at the border who are seeking asylum, with earth care and recycling, and going along the highway picking up trash and things like that.
Does the church have an adopt the highway mile?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Where's your mile?
It's you'll see the sign as you go down. What's this, 165?
Yes.
Yeah, you'll see the sign on 165 as you go down there. It has our name on it.
I often looked into, or wanted to look into, how you get one. And
yeah. Everybody's, well, we've been talking about the highway's been so clean lately that some of us need to start polluting so that we can have something to pick up.
I'll be there.
and you know, I think that part of what's different about running a nonprofit than running a for-profit business is, a lot of people think, you know, if they have this model of thinking where they think that you're like a CEO and you can just kind of order people around and tell them what to do, and you know, it's but it's not like that with an army of volunteers. You can't manage that way. What you have to do is you have to manage through motivation and encouragement and helping people to see the importance of what they're doing, and helping people to see, well, we need somebody to do this because it's important and because this is doing this as part of God's work. And so you sometimes have people who come to you and say, well, why can't you just tell this person what to do? And why can't you just order this person around and scare them and coerce them? It just doesn't work that way in a nonprofit with an army of volunteers. And so, no. Yeah. So
it's surprising that anyone ever volunteers.
Right. Yes.
Because there's not only in volunteers, but in, I've been going to different physical therapies and doctor's visits, things like that.
Right.
And there's always one person in that office,
yeah,
who is nutty about masks.
Yeah.
Like, if you accidentally forget one, they're gonna jump across the desk and full body tackle you.
Right.
And they're just serious about it. And,
right.
And you, I guess you could get upset with them, but it's, you know, that they're coming from a good place, perhaps a little misinformed or a little zealous.
Mm.
I would think the congregation might have one or two of those that everyone has to.
Yeah, manage? So I guess, I mean, we have, you know,
And you can name names if you like.
I think we've been very, with COVID, we've erred on the side of being very cautious. But our philosophy has been that we would rather err on the side of caution than err on the side of being cavalier. And we don't want to be like those churches who, as you said, would just say, well, God will take care of us, let's throw caution to the wind and pack everybody in here like sardines. We don't want to do that, to go to that extreme. And so, some people would say, I think some people have said within our community that we have gone too far in the direction of caution. But as you've said, it's whether we have or not, it's well-intentioned, and it's, we, you know, the view has been this is the best way to get through it, and we want to get through it with everybody being safe. And if we have to put up with a little bit of inconvenience to do that, then we're going to put up with some inconvenience. So
we talked about the news.
Yeah.
Do these folks not pay attention to the rest of the world? That, as I understand it, it's so bad in Germany now.
Right. Right.
You cannot leave your home without a note from your doctor that you're going to the doctor.
Wow.
You can't leave your home. You'll be arrested and fined.
Wow.
And I just want to go to spring break, Rich.
Yeah.
So it's, we are the ones that are totally different than the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And yet it doesn't seem to make any difference. You get that old Florida, California, Texas right. thing. And it's nutty.
Yeah.
And some people, like you said, are zealots. And they,
right.
Yeah. I stopping by my physical therapist 7 a.m. on Monday morning. Mm. And this nice-looking, you know, I say nice-looking, who can tell with a mask on?
Right.
But she had nice eyes.
Nice eyes, right? You know. It's amazing how much eye contact we've been making these days with people. You know, it's, yeah.
But, yeah, and but, she pulled into the parking spot. I didn't know if she was going into the therapist or someplace else.
Right.
Maybe 35 or whatever. Nice car. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't mean this rated, but I mean a recent car.
Right.
Clean. Had all its hubcaps. Yeah. I don't know if people steal them or that's from potholes, but that's a whole other conversation.
I don't know.
But she had two masks on, and she was alone in her car.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Did she, first mask was to protect me, and the second was to protect herself?
Yeah.
She was at least smart enough to be able to afford a car.
Yeah.
And pass the driver's license test. And she believes that this is the best thing to do. It's not easy.
Right.
I mean, I respect her for doing what she thinks is right.
Right, yeah. Just,
but that's the thing. How do you know it's right?
Yeah.
And from a church management, it's, how do you know when it's time?
Right, right. And that's, well, these are the questions that we're wrestling with, too. We're wrestling with the question of how do we know when it's time? And these aren't easy decisions to make, and they're judgment calls. And they're judgment calls, you know, and so...
That is what we have learned. They're all judgment.
They're all judgment calls.
People that are telling us it's not a judgment call. This
right.
is fact.
Right. It's right. You're weighing different values. You're weighing the value of being safe and you're versus the value of having freedom to live your life and freedom to live your life and worship and. And these are both important values, you know. At some point you have to say, what's the value of protecting your life if I don't have a life, if I'm not able to live? And so, we're always weighing different values, and you have to make a tough judgment call. And you're not going to please everybody. That's the thing. You're going to have people who, you know, in a community, in any kind of community of faith, you're going to have people who are opposed to whatever you're doing. On either side.
On any subject.
On any subject.
Yeah.
Yes. But this has been a very emotional one because it affects people. It affects things that people value so much, which is like, you know, fellowshipping and getting together and worshiping and hearing a choir sing. These are very emotional things. And so people have had a tendency sometimes to get emotional about them. But... I think that's to be expected.
Well, have you had, at least within your segment of the religious world, do you have some people at the Las Placitas Presbyterian Church, and we'll remind everyone, this is KUPR 99.9 in the high desert of beautiful Placitas. Would you say this is beautiful Placitas?
It's gorgeous. Couldn't be more beautiful.
And we're talking with Reverend Richard Holmes of the Las Placitas Presbyterian Church, founded in what year?
1894 was when it was founded.
It was a Sunday, I think. Are there any folks who, no matter what, I want to be there on Sunday? And other folks that go, you know, Reverend Holmes?
Yeah.
PhD? I'm really digging this Zoom.
Yeah, yeah.
But please don't stop it.
Right.
I love going to church in my underwear.
Absolutely, you're absolutely right. We have both of those. We have both of those. People who wouldn't dare miss a Sunday, and then people who love Zoom.
Any commonality amongst the people who like the Zoom? Because as you said,
I think some of them, Matthew, are people who are immunocompromised. And how's that? How do you say it? Immunocompromised? How do you say that word?
Immunocompromised.
so some folks are immunocompromised, have various health issues, things like that. Really enjoy Zoom, that's one commonality.
Okay.
I mean, and maybe you do have some people.
But would
who just,
they have come pre-COVID?
A lot of them would have. A lot of them would have some. Well, some of them would have come pre-COVID, but. you know, they might have stayed away during flu season and things like that, I'm guessing. Okay. But now that this is here and they have certain health issues, they'd like to stay away. But others, yeah, I do think there's probably others who they like going to church in their pajamas, and it's nice to, you know, I think you have both of those.
I would think in your particular case, or the case of the Presbyterian Church in general,
yeah,
it is a communal thing. There's a lot of hugging and hello and how are you,
yeah,
and the choir right. and all that. That it's what I query a lot of professional, previously touring musicians with. If you could make a living only doing. They don't use Zoom. They use...
Oh, this sounds like a deep question. I feel a deep question coming on.
Well, I'm not sure because I haven't formulated it yet. But the sense of loss, because a lot of the people that I've had the fortune, I've been blessed to be able to get to know these people.
Yes, yes.
A lot of them are solo artists.
Yes.
Or a duet.
Yeah.
But some of these solo artists, especially pianists or cellists, will also perform with a full orchestra. So, you know, when I think of actors or people performing to huge audiences, I have the whole stereotype of the concert pianist who started at age 4 and practiced all day and didn't have a sweet 16 or whatever, because they were driven into this. Yet the thrill, I would think the thrill when you come from behind that curtain and you see 88 adults, because you could be 14 when you're starting.
Right.
And it's like your parents or grandparents. And then you walk out and everyone's, the whole orchestra stands and applauds for you.
Right.
I get goosebumps just thinking about that.
Right, right, right.
And to not have that for a year and who knows if for another year, that's going to be horrific.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been tough. I mean, it's been tough. I think, yes, because I mean, I very much thrive on, I think, you know, I think, and some people don't. I mean, I think some people, I mean, I've known people who have gotten physically sick before preaching on Sunday morning. And I mean, they would spend every single Saturday night getting physically sick because they are terrified. Mm-hmm. They're terrified of getting up in front of, you know, a congregation of 100 people. I thrive on that. The more people, the better, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I could stand in front of a stadium of 80,000 people, and I would love it. But I do thrive. It's part of my personality. I do thrive on being in front of large groups of people. So, yeah, I do miss that.
Is that an ego thing, or you want to be popular, or you have a message you want to share? I should probably ask that one first.
I hope it's not an ego thing.
What's wrong with that ego?
I don't think it's an ego thing. I think it's just, I just feel very comfortable in that setting. I feel very comfortable in front of large congregations and large groups. And yeah, I do feel like I have a message to share.
Right.
Maybe it's partly ego. But I don't know.
Don't you want to be in Home Depot or someplace and someone go, Reverend, my cousin's in from out of town. He's the greatest pastor in the world.
Yeah, but maybe, I mean, you could have hit the nail on the head. Maybe it's partly ego. I don't know.
New initiatives for the church? What's coming up in, I guess,
2025? We're doing some maintenance things, trying to, you know, we have a roof to patch, we have a sidewalk to improve, we have an irrigation system to fix, and things like that. We're also, though, looking to have a new webmaster and kind of redesign our website. So if you're out there and you have skills that you would like to share with us, we would love to have you.
Your webmaster is retiring?
Webmaster is retiring from the position. He's been doing it for 8 years and wants to...
It's a nice website.
Yeah, well, thank you. Wants to hang up his hat and let somebody else have a turn at it. So that's something we're looking to do. So that's where we're looking to do that and improve that. And, you know, we just recently... put our first ad on Nextdoor. I don't know if you've seen Nextdoor, but it's there's all kinds of ads and things on there. We just did that. We just started doing that. So,
Well, this is all pretty cool. I'm glad we did this again.
Well, thank you. Me too.
What do you want to share with the world?
Well, I want to, you know, if you're out there and you're listening, and you're looking for a church, we would love to have you, and you can come just as you are. And we have people who, you know, we have people who are, who have, gosh, I mean, who've been Presbyterians going back generations, but we have people who are brand new to all this and who are exploring and who just are trying to find answers to questions. And so whoever you are, we welcome you. And, you know, I know that you, I mean, you hear that from every church. I mean, the churches that have signs that say everybody welcome, there are a dime a dozen. Mm-hmm. But I think you really will find that here at Las Placidas. And, you know, don't take my word for it, though. Check it out, and we'd love to have you.
If someone did not want to be in the sanctuary
right.
at this point, where would they tune in at what time?
If you want to have a Zoom link, we want to send you a Zoom link. We'd be happy to do that, and you can tune in. You can call us at 867-5718, or you can go to lasplacidaschurch.org. And we would love to, we'd love to send you a link, and you could get on that way.
So Las Placitas Church,
LasPlacitasChurch.org,
and you'll find out everything you need to know.
Yes,
mm-hmm. And this, you never know when these things are going to air, but it is Cinco de Mayo.
It's Cinco de Mayo.
So Nueve de Mayo,
yes.
This Sunday, Mother's Day. That's got to be a big sermon day.
It's a big sermon day. Yes,
mm-hmm. I know it's not up there with Easter and. Chosen aside, red or green?
Green, definitely green. Has to be green, folks.
Really?
Yeah.
Because of the consistency or the heat?
The flavor. The flavor. Okay. It's a much better flavor, I think, than red. Yeah.
So you found the cafe?
Love the cafe.
How can you
love
not?
Love the cafe. Yeah. Yeah. Giving you free advertising, cafe.
Well, and it's love you. Like they need it, right?
No, this has been great. Love this.
I've had a really good time. Bishop or
sorry,
5-year plan? You want to move up?
To I'll be Pope. I want to be Pope in 5 years. Okay. Yeah, sure.
$49.95. I'll give you a website. You can become Pope.
All right. Okay. Okay.
For the Matthew Bronson Show and KUPR, we've been having a conversation with Reverend Richard Holmes, PhD of all things. Go figure. The new guy in town. Bring your tar and feathers to the parade.
Yes, yes, please.
At the Las Placidas Presbyterian Church. So again, thank you. And
absolutely.
We'll do it again.
This has been fun. Right. This has been fun, Matthew.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks.